Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider.
We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, spiritual opinions, and as many surprises as possible. Since only our innocence can truly be surprised, please feel free to bring yours with you.
Tonight's program is brought to you by Go Raw, natural food, 100%. Good for you, tastes good, crunchy, munchy. Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. We so appreciate y'all helping us out and supporting us so we can share the good deal. I'll talk more about that later with everybody. Anyway, Go Raw, you can go to their website, goraw.com, and you can call in to us during the evening at 888-627-6008. I say share the good deal. The other night I was writing about the good news. The gospel supposedly is the good news. And I had this way of reframing it that it's the good deal. And the way it's a good deal is like in the earth life, we're always looking for a good deal. I'm always looking for a good deal. I mean, that's just practically my middle name, Get a Good Deal, Errol Strider. And
if it's your middle name, it's Errol Get a Good Deal Strider.
Yeah, I was always kind of...
Yeah, well go,
never
go on,
mind.
Go on.
So, and then I was thinking about the good deal from a spiritual perspective, because all the good deals that I get here, they feel great, doesn't it? I mean, don't you love it when you get like a great deal? I think most people do, and when people get it, they love to go, you know, I was at this over there the other day, and I got three of these, and I only had to pay half as much as the third that I thought I would have paid the four times that I was trying to buy it, or something like that. But my point is that it's a good deal. We love it. And then I was thinking about, from a spiritual perspective, the good deal. And the good deal is that we are given this capacity to be able to create and manifest that which is most real about us anytime we want. Did you follow that?
Yeah, that is a good deal.
And that's really a good deal, because even though I can be just as much a consumer, covetous kind of guy as the next guy, I recognize that the main value of my being is what I create and contribute. And that's how I continue to extend myself. And I think it's only when I live in my more perverse, ego-driven nature that I try and get, even to the point of sometimes making getting a good deal more important than just having whatever it is the good deal was going to get me.
Well, the good deal, of course, is that the more you give, the more you have. I mean, that's the good deal. You don't have to get anything because you already have it. And you only know you have it by giving it. And what is the best deal of all is unlimited love. No matter how much you give it, you can't get rid of it.
That's why tonight, folks, we're offering as a special bonus to our listeners, unlimited love. You cannot find the end of this love. We can send you off in any direction, up and down, sideways, back and forth. You can go for days, weeks, months. You can even go forever, and you will not find the end to love. Try as we may, it's always an endless, fabulous adventure of discovering the unendingness of love.
Yeah, it's the best deal I could ever get. I mean, something that doesn't run out. You know, I always think there's, we used to talk about built-in obsolescence. you know, I think in the 70s.
My body is built in obsolescence, actually.
Well, you bought things in the 40s and the 50s. I mean, they were built to last you at least 20, 30 years.
I was born then, see?
And you got jobs that were supposed to last you your life, you know? And then all of a sudden, everything changed. You know, it was like throw away things. You know, you threw away this. You bought this pen. It'll give you X amount of rights, and then you throw it away. Where you had a pen, you put it in ink, and you lifted up a little thing, and the ink filled it up. And you'd have that pen the rest of your life. But all you had to do is buy new ink.
Does it give us also X amount of wrongs?
Well, the wrongs only lead us to understand how to get to the rights.
I think it's a pretty simple system that they've set up for us. When you hit and come up against pain, don't keep going that way.
One would think.
And when,
but you know something I'm aware of, and I meet people every day that make me realize this, that some people are so identified with the pain of their own existence that to let it go for any reason whatsoever, it would be killing themselves.
That's pretty extreme.
Well, it's not that extreme. You can almost see it in people's eyes. You realize that that's who they are. I mean, that's their identity. Their identity hurts. And that's scary, but nevertheless, it's true.
Well, as you know, if you've been listening with us, good friend here. Can I fill you up a little more drink? Want some more water? You okay? Okay. That our quest always in these conversations and in our life is to tap into that which is most authentic and to become more and more aware and more conscious. And what comes with that is greater range of expression, greater possibilities of understanding. And understanding is a fabulous thing that we get to have if we seek it and if we're open to it, to be able to understand something, to be able to fathom its dimensions, use, implications, positive, negatives, pros and cons.
I'm reading a book now that you gave me, this book by Neal Stephenson. I can't remember the name of it.
Quicksilver,
yeah. I was almost going to say Quicksilver. But it's such an exploration of the mind and how it delves into understanding everything, from the refractory of light to why we do this or why we do that, or the heavens and the stars and how they got there and the distance between the stars and the scientific exploration.
And which stars got a divorce and had out of marriage wedlock?
That's another book. I think that's called The Hollywood Reporter or something like that. Anyway, and what I'm aware of is these people who the book explores more than anything else, the mental giants, they were not what I would call congruent, because their bodies, their physical bodies, were almost divorced from their mental exploration.
Thomas Edison said that the only purpose of his body was to carry his brain around.
Yeah, and I really believe that's true for a lot of scientists.
Now, this book,
the scientist discovery in this book.
Now, they didn't call them scientists. This is what time of Isaac Newton. He's actually a character in the book. They called them natural philosophers.
Right.
And that's really interesting that that's how science, as we have come to know it, was called natural philosophy, as a species began to pay attention to the machinations of nature. Have you ever done the machination? It's kind of like a
only with about 10 other people.
Oh, it's great. We hope
doing
that,
the machination.
Boom, boom, boom. So, one of the things I want to share with you is that it's really kind of a new dawn that is available to us in our consciousness any time we're willing to show up in the now with innocent perception. So let's see if we can just be mindful of that as you listen to this song by the Waylon Jennings. beautiful dawn. Get new with this right now.
Take me to the breaking of a beautiful dawn. Take me to the place where we came from. Take me to the end so I can see the start. There's only one way to mend a broken
Take me to the place where I feel no shame.
I heard that.
Take me to the place where courage has no name.
Yeah.
Interesting lyric.
Very interesting lyric.
Waylon Jennings.
You know, I I read this article the other day in the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle, and they were talking about a study that was being made by some guy from UC Berkeley on that rich people are not as nice or, you know, nasty.
Right, I saw that.
The thing is, and I remembered some, a long time ago, I love historical novels. You know, we love historical novels, you and I. And there, in a lot of novels, I would read about the nouveau riche, you know, people who accumulate, made money, didn't inherit it or anything. But and you know, you have to be ruthless in our society when you're to accumulate and grasp and fight to make a lot of money over other people. But and so you wouldn't be very nice, obviously. You know, you wouldn't be considerate and kind because you wouldn't be making that money, because usually you're making it on the backs of other people. But the next generation, you know, they're the aristocrat. You know, has an aristocratic kind of thing. They learned a certain elegance to life. They live a certain way. They didn't have to struggle, and they can be kinder. You know, so it's very interesting that it's not the money that makes them nasty. It's the drive to get that money, I think. That, and I didn't notice that in that article at all, that he talked about that, you know, that what is the thing that makes you want to have that money more than anything else? And that's what makes you not nice or kind.
So if you've ever wondered why you're not nice, You've looked hard at yourself with some ruthless honesty. You found it's because you made all that money.
You can give it away anytime.
So you can give it away. You can send it to us here, and we'll disperse it amongst ourselves.
And probably to the people who don't have a lot of money and are very, mean because they're angry that there are people who have more than they do.
Now, keep in mind that the article didn't necessarily use the words like mean and nice and those kind of...
No, they said nasty. They used the word nasty.
They really did use the word nasty.
Yeah, nasty. Yeah.
Oh, nasty.
Are rich people nastier or something like that was the headline.
Well, let us know what you think, 888-627-6008. Tonight, I'm kind of focused on the whole idea of learning. I'll tell you why. There is a wonderful online event that is produced, I guess, and hosted by Michael Dowell.
Oh.
Right? I think it's Dowell. Forgive me.
Michael. Or Dowd.
Dowd. Excuse me, Michael Dowd. And he's got like 55 major progressive thinkers, everyone from Ken Wilber to Deepak to he's got a senator, Sheldon Whitehouse. He's got all kinds of people. And he's interviewed them on Skype. And you can listen to them. I signed up and I plan to listen to them. What I'm curious about is if any of them address the issue of how we interface with people when they're really young and learning their values and being educated. I continue to believe strongly that if we want to move the world forward to a more workable, equitable, sustainable, responsible way of being, that it starts early on in life when we're just learning our values as children. And I think it's so critical that we teach our children, and that's where we start this process.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well their father's hell. It slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they pick, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would die. So just look at them and sigh. That your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you
look right. So just look at them and sigh.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Teach your children. Yeah, I think in order to evolve, it just seems so practical and wise to instill those kind of values.
Yeah, but you have to have values to instill values.
Whoops.
I mean, I thought it was interesting. We had a guest here tonight. A friend came by shortly before the show, and she was talking about how her mom did certain things to her that she vowed she would not pass on to her child. And I've heard lots of people say that, including myself. You know, this is something my mother did that I wouldn't do. And maybe that's how we evolve, you know. We pluck out the things that didn't work. And I'm sure that as much as I tried not to do certain things to my children or pass on certain things to my children, I'm sure that they, now going to have children, are going to say, well, I'm never going to do what my mother did to me, to my children. Even though I might have weeded out what my mother did to me, I still had my stuff.
Right, that they have to weed out.
That they have to weed out. And it goes like that. And maybe, you know, centuries and centuries and eons go by, and we weeded out all of that stuff. And to get to that place where we're truly whole. I don't know. You know, maybe that's what evolution is all about, you know, when what we pass on to our children. We get to take the best of what we learned, or what we didn't learn, you know, throw away the worst of what we didn't learn. Of what we learned, and just keep that going. And what else can we do? You know, you have we do a piece, you know, that piece we do, Family Baggage, in which you say that at the very end of Shame, you say she did the best she could with the information she had. I think there's a
Lou there. Says that in, right. About the female character in the play Family Baggage, which was created by Lou Montgomery, and she, one of the pieces in the script, she talks about, you know, growing up with alcoholic parents, and one of the lines is, though, and I think it's very forgiving, they did the best they could with the information they had.
Yeah, and I think that's all we ever can do, and then the next generation comes along and does the best they can with the information they've gleaned from that relationship with their parents.
That's interesting, because the Urantia book, which we refer to often because it's so big, and
we only refer to big books.
Yeah, well, it just eclipses your word usage in your mind. Oh my God, there's no more room for other words after that book. But I love its wisdom, and one of the things that it says is, God judges us by our intents, not our accomplishments. And I think that's very, very good. That's a good deal. That's another example of a good deal, because like you said, that given the consciousness, the level of learning, the conditioning that any of us find ourselves living in and out of, we're only going to accomplish so much. But the intent is acknowledged. And
that we mean to do well, and we mean to embrace the best that we have to offer, even though we don't know what the best is in the bigger picture.
Well, I was reading yesterday in the Keys of, Love Without End, where he talks about wholeness. Wholeness is love, and love is wholeness, and wholeness supports love, and love supports wholeness. So I believe that that intent is an intent toward wholeness, toward greater union, joining, even though we undermine ourselves by separating and disjoining so much of our lives through judgment. And that's the place to learn to catch yourself, is at least for me, is when I go into judgment of myself or others, and to be reminded that it's based upon nothing.
I know, and I want to just for 1 second to define judgment the way we use it, because a lot of people think of judgment as discernment, and we use judgment here as the master separator, so to speak. Because judgment can be like, oh, they're really beautiful, and I'm not. So there's a separation. It's not like it's always something bad. It's we classify something in such a way that it separates us from them. I'll put it that way. Classify somebody in such a way that it separates us from them.
That's a good definition of judgment.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
that. Very good, Shelley.
I just got an A.
You got an A on your definition of judgment. That's my judgment about your definition of judgment.
But it's not really, because it didn't separate you from me. In fact, if anything, it brought you closer to me.
That's right.
So and the definition we just created, that is not a judgment, but merely an observation.
And the discrimination.
And discrimination.
When that cuts in, and as we grow, hopefully we develop some maturity, and that's if we're paying attention, and we just really have to keep learning, don't we? You learn.
You laugh, you laugh, you chase.
Thank you, Alanis Morissette.
Oh, yeah.
We've played her songs before. She's got a really interesting voice. But what she said, the lyrics, you live, you learn, you love, you learn, you cry, you learn, you lose, you learn, you bleed, you learn, you scream, you learn, you grieve, you learn, you choke, you learn, you laugh, you learn. You choose, you learn, you pray, you learn, you ask, you learn, you live, you learn. And you couldn't hear one of the lyrics. She sings, wear it out, you know, like, and the chorus underneath, I don't know if you could make the words out, says the way a three-year-old would do it.
Uh-huh. And, you know, in some ways we are. Sometimes I have this feeling that we're, this is kindergarten, you know. We're in kindergarten.
You think
here.
It's that advanced? Really?
Our life on this planet.
I think it's more like embryo.
Well, for some people, I think it's like, because it's all about, we're learning constantly from the interaction we have with everything. The interaction we have with ourselves, everything. It's all teaching us. This is where we're learning, and it's just constant, and it never stops. It never stops. And I mean, I like to believe that there's more after this, that this accumulation of what we learned goes on as a cumulative thing. Whatever we truly learned is bundled up into another kind of, entity or package.
Container.
And we have, and that which we have truly learned to further our growth stays with us. And I think the Urantia book says something like that, you know, what we take with us is of spiritual value or something like that.
Yeah, it says what you get to take with you from this life is that which has spiritual value and one carry on.
Earl's joke of when we get to the holy gates.
When we get to the other side.
Carry on.
Yeah, there she is, just cutting into my joke.
Oh, I know, and I do such a terrible job. Forgive me.
And she ruined the timing.
Okay.
Because it's all about timing.
Take it back. Cross it out.
Yeah.
Put your little thing on.
What was your motivation? I'm looking for something. I haven't judged anybody. And
I got all excited about it. I thought it was so good. I wanted to share it. I'm sorry. I didn't bend to the master. I didn't defer to the master.
Let's talk about
the originator of the joke.
Please.
Could you say it again?
No. Let's move on. Let's talk about laughter.
Carry on.
Learning to carry on. Very good. Carry on, Nurse. Remember all those movies? Carry on, Nurse.
Oh,
carry
God,
on, this
so
guy,
silly.
That guy. Those British
Dirk Bogart,
British comedies. They talked about all that sort of thing back in the days then. Well, hi, Reginald. It's Reginald Umbridge is here with us. Oh, yes. Well, I've been listening to your jabbering on about the things you talk about, and as if anyone else is interested. But I actually am interested in some of the things you say, and especially this idea about whether or not you continue on. I was talking to Lady Umbridge about that just recently. How would we know that we carry on? And, Lady Umbridge, she's here. Do you mind coming in? What was it that you said the other night we were talking about?
Oh, it's so hard to remember what I say from one moment to the other, Lord Umbridge. But I do remember something about the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Oh, that was it, my dear. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, you see. So
if there are more parts, the whole would be greater still.
Exactly. And so since our parts are part of the whole, as long as the whole keeps being whole, then we're sure to be part of the whole.
Well, as we accumulate more true wisdom, we become greater. That's what I think.
Oh, I love that. Becoming greater, eh? Ah, excellent. So greater would mean what? I suspect being greater would mean that you have increased capacities to more effectively amplify the quality and the gusto of life for more and more people all the time. And that gusto just keeps bubbling up. It's very like jumping in the cold water, which I did the other day. It's very bracing.
I'm sure it must be, Lord Umbridge, but it's also, for you, it's very masculine, gusto. I would use more tender words like marvelous and magnificence and excellence and whatever.
Well, there you have it. And we're so glad. Thank you for letting us just pop in like this and have a word. We just normally just talking to ourselves, each other, and sometimes I think we've used it all up, but there's always something new that surprises us.
You can never use it all up, Lord Umbridge, because every second is brand new, and because every second is brand new, there's something new to see.
Of course there
is. So if you want to talk about it, you know, it's always new.
Well, it's right there, right in front of you all the time, so whatever shows up, pop, 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 it's right there.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. Ta-ta. Good night. Thank you. Thank you so much for... That was good. I got some insight. I like this thing about the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. What do you think?
I think it was invented.
Which one?
No, I think it was discovered.
Which was discovered?
The whole being greater than the sum of its parts.
Ah, I see. I see.
Or is the whole exactly the sum of its parts?
I don't know. I don't know. But I think that inclination to move toward the wholeness is just... so great, and that's why we do this show all the time, every week.
It's like gravity going in another direction. Spiritual gravity, to me, is expansion, where physical gravity is coming back to the earth.
That's right. Physical gravity is coming back to the earth. And speaking of earth, this is Insight Out.
The Naked Truth.
Coming to you live from Lupin Lodge.
Where clothing is optional, but the truth is always
naked. Speaking of children and newth, which is like new and youth, newth. This is Cat Stevens.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes or taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, as you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play? Fresh green grass for your lorry loads, pumping petrol gas, and you make them long and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. Oh, I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, why do the children play? Thank you.
sky. Scrapers fill the air. But will you keep on building higher till there's no more room up there? Will you make us laugh? Will you make us cry? Will you tell us when to live? Will you tell us when to die? I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. But tell me, why do the children
I had this image of young boys standing on a street corner, you know, with buds in their ears and cigarettes in their mouths. And
a cell phone in their hand.
Yeah, that's the buds in their ears.
Oh,
they're
right.
Listening to the cell phones and texting and that physical. And today I looked out the window of the office that I work in. And I saw these two fathers playing with paper airplanes with their kids and running back and forth and getting them. And I thought, and there was something so innocent and delicious about that. That really was a delightful thing where the children played, you know, with paper airplanes and not violently. It was very nice.
So are you listening, neighbor? Do you want something more to drink? A little piece of cake? They made some banana bread here. I'm a big banana bread, pumpkin bread kind of guy.
He is a big banana bread, pumpkin bread kind of guy.
Yeah. Okay. I tell you, if you want to.
And I had a good oven, and I did have a good oven for a while in our time together. I did make a lot of banana bread and pumpkin bread.
She did.
And carrot cake. Too.
And carrot cake, and we were very grateful. So what else, Rochelle?
Where do the children play?
Yeah, where do the children play?
You know, for those of you who don't know, you know, we're going to be grandparents in a little while. Probably
Next month. About this time.
Yeah, and it's hard to think. I keep thinking ahead somehow as to my grandchild being like 3 or 4 where we can talk about things. And I know there's going to be a while before that happens. And the early part of our relationship is really going to be gurgling and cooing and changing dirty diapers and spooning little bits of half-eaten food or something like that into her mouth. But there's something about passing on something to the next generation.
Well, you teach them right away, though, how to write a check. You don't wait on that.
Not quite.
No.
Okay.
I only say that because my parents never taught me how to write a check.
They really didn't?
No.
I remember our eldest son coming to me one day and I asked him what he wanted to learn. And that was one of the things he wanted to learn. He wanted to learn how to write checks and what to do with money in the bank and things like that. And I don't remember our youngest son doing it because he probably already knew it.
He came in knowing it.
I think so. But I remember him asking that, and I thought, oh, yeah, this is a very smart thing to want to know right now.
But I would like to come back to this topic of this event that's happening, Michael Dowd, The Future is Calling Us to Greatness.
Yeah, it's called?
That's the conference. And between now and next week, I will plan to check some of those out. I'm very interested in hearing what all these folks have to say. And for those of you who will be in the future, I want to just talk to you for just a minute. This may not apply to those of you who are still living in the past, of course, but feel free to listen in. For those of you who are future-oriented, and there's this paradox. I mean, there's this thing that's this future, and we kind of believe that it's going to exist.
And governable.
And we can control it and manage it and manipulate it, and to some extent we can. We can actually make an appointment to be somewhere or put a timer on a bomb so when it goes down to 1-0, it explodes. So we have some degree of control, and yet the future always and forever arises out of the present, which is...
Does seem to work that way, doesn't it?
Yes. So, and then what exactly is the future when we think about planning and describing the future? Certain things are going to take place, activities are going to happen, exchanges are going to be made, decisions are going to be made that affect the quality of life for ourselves and others. For the next future, right?
One future begets another future.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
It does.
But this idea of being called to greatness, I want to go back and share something that I feel strongly about, and that is that a great time and a great demographic, if you're really looking at affecting the future in a very effective way, is to reach people in the ages of 15, 16, and right there and next few years after that, because that's when people seem to have the capacity or develop the capacity to be philosophic about life. Philosophical, which means to look at it more objectively rather than just from a compulsive, I want this, I don't want that kind of place. And so it's a new philosophy of living that I would think we would agree to in this regard of calling us to greatness, a philosophy of living, a way of understanding ourselves in the relationship to the whole. And the whole, to me, is beyond the whole of the planet. It's the whole of this thing called evolution. Michael Dodd, incidentally, part of his ministry has been to go around to the Christian community with a perspective on how God works through evolution, and I so resonate with that.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I mean, I just don't think it's possible not to believe in the very word evolution, evolve, because as I tell people, I don't see too many fetuses walking around. I mean, you move from something to something else, to something else, to something else. You evolve.
We've been talking to our grand fetus, I guess it is, at this point.
At this point, she's our grand fetus, right. And it's so interesting to realize that there's a new being coming into the world that has a lot of who we are within it already, you know, just
genetically,
you know, that we've contributed to this being. Her other grandparents, our daughter-in-law's parents, also have contributed to her being it through our children. And there's something miraculous about that. I'm constantly in awe.
I just hope she doesn't get this thing that my sister and I got, that she says it's congenital, and that's with our feet and our toes and build-ups of...
Errol, do you really need to bring that up right now? I think I'm going to throw up.
No,
that was
no.
Disgusting. You do not need to tell us that.
Really?
I mean, we have good toes. My family has good toes. Yeah. Let's talk about good toes.
Okay. I'm going to really project that our grandchild gets your family's toe genes.
Yes, good toes.
Good
we
toe
have
genes.
Good toes all through our family.
Speaking of toe genes, the DNA in biology, I've often heard them refer to the whole phenomenon of creation and cell creation and the DNA, RNA, creating protein linkages phenomenon as the central dogma. And I believe that if you look at, can y'all get out one of your chromosomes while you're just sitting there? You got some, yeah. That'll work. Pull that one up. Any of them are fine. Pull out that. That's a good chromosome. Take a look at it. And you'll notice it's just double. Well, that one's kind of like on its way. Can you get one that's a fresh one? Yeah. Well, it's still a vibe. Good. All right. Because you notice how there's this double helix, like this thing is all wrapped around itself. But it's two sides of it, and that's why every generation gets something a little bit different, because of the way these two sides link up, and depending upon where they link up in this chain of, is it base nucleotides. I forget. Anyway, it's a chain. Mm-hmm. And we'll determine the expression, the genetic expression of all these different facets of who we each become and how we express ourselves.
I like that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that who we are and how we express ourselves go together.
All right, well, let's bring it down then. Who we are and how we express ourselves, and especially how we express ourselves, you know, through our children. Well, this just happens to be our child, Lev, and his new song that he's just put out, Lev Strider, and I think Saying It the Way It Is, which is, well, here it is.
Well, it all seems such a haze, and I wonder how could it be that we didn't. Thank you.
Oh.
Tell me that isn't worth crowing over when your son sings and writes and orchestrates that song. And you can actually see
it. A song of gratitude.
You can see it on YouTube. Go to Lev Strider, L-E-V, Strider, and you'll see it. And the lyrics play through the video, and you see him, that great picture of him.
Wow.
And we're just so grateful and appreciative that we can share this life with these beings that are our children. And for those of you, you got a kid, don't you? What, how old are you? Three? 3 and 8? It's one of our guests here in our studio. So what do you know so far? Yep, keep you busy. Yep, keep you on your toes. Right.
I think the interesting thing about, you know, like, parenting, sometimes we get so caught up on the doing of the parenting that we forget that at the same time that we're doing all this, we are absorbing so much. We are learning so much being parents.
Okay, here's an important lesson, and I'd like to explore this in more detail, but the Urantia book says children are most impacted by the loyalties of their parents. That's what seems to have the most effect on them. Now, that is a really interesting, different notion to think about how your loyalties and what you're loyal to, and maybe we can talk about that next week. Maybe you all can think about it and share your experience of it. We're going to need to bring it to a close here pretty soon. This is Insight Out.
Yeah, if you do have any things that you'd like us to explore, go to estrider@gmail.com, because he looks at his email every single day, and I don't always. Or you could call us next week at 888-627-6008. Put it in your calendar.
And go to our website. We have many videos. We have like 15 videos of some of our live performances. We have two or three of some of our dead ones. I wouldn't recommend those. But
whatever you
we'll
do,
be back. And
remember.
Thank you, Go Raw, for sponsoring us and helping us be able to share our experiences. And what was it we have to remember, Rochelle?
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
You heard it here.
Good night.